As expected, despite a 5-game win streak, the Robert Sarver investigation by the NBA continues to make headlines and be the top story in Sunsland. We'll get the latest on that scandal as well as some thoughts on the past 2 games over the weekend. All of that coming up right away on Locked On Suns.
Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, covering the Suns the past 5 seasons. As a credentialed media member, thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen every single morning for the latest Suns news, like this Penny Sarver story by Baxter Holmes in the lead-up, I guess the aftermath more like, of this investigation now, hanging over the Suns' head against Robert Sarver. We'll also talk about 121-117 win over the Sun, over the Hawks by the Suns, as well as a 109-104 win by the Suns over the Kings. We'll really do a notebook dump for that. I'm not going to give you the breaks of each game after it's been a little bit, but I do want to make sure we hit those and some of the new developments, the return of campaign, all that good stuff. So that will be the rundown for today. The show today is sponsored by McDonald's. Proudly serving communities since 1965, McDonald's has always been more than just a place to get tasty, affordable food. It's also an unofficial community center. A big thank you to our friends at McDonald's for always being there. I am loving it. Okay, so Baxter Holmes continues to report on the Phoenix Suns after his several thousand word, expose, really, on the Suns, broke open the story, created this investigation. Baxter has been on it since he wrote up the announcement that the NBA would create an investigation into the Suns and the staff's reaction. We talked a little bit about some of that with Katie Heindel on Monday's show. Thank you for your patience not having a Tuesday show. I got married. Well, I have been married, but I had a wedding on Monday night, so that was the reason for the missed show. I hope you guys will understand. But that is the show to check out for the initial fallout. This Baxter Holmes story today on Tuesday is putting the story even further. The headline, very simply, Penny Sarver, wife of Robert Sarver, sent messages to 3 former Phoenix Suns employees. That is about the gist of it and should be damning enough. The story goes on to say that Penny messaged 3 former employees, 2 from her Instagram DMs and 1 via text message. Penny Sarver confirmed that she did this over the weekend. Quote, I decided on my own to reach out to a few people to try and set the record straight and to share how disappointed and hurt I am by the lies that are circulating about my husband and the Suns organization. I shared the betrayal that I felt and I touched on some of the pain that we are going through as a family. Any suggestion that I tried to intimidate anyone is as silly as it is wrong and outrageous. She, according to the messages which were obtained by Baxter, told the person, quote, think about your own child for a second and imagine the tables turned. If something happens to one of my children, I will hold you and Earl Watson personally responsible. The employee told Baxter, I don't know how to interpret it other than as a threat. So I was talking about this with somebody else reporting on this story, and we were talking, what does this mean? What really does it tell us about the Sarver family's response to this, how the investigation might play out, anything? And I don't know if this, in the grand scheme of things, makes what the allegations say is going on in that workplace any worse, because these are people who she has messaged thus far who are former employees, and maybe she could have or may have already done the same thing to other employees that currently work there, which would be quite different. But what this does do in this story is it incriminates the Sarvers, and now we are talking about both of them, and her comments by extension incriminate him, and obviously she, by admitting to this, which is the legal ramifications, I'm far from being a lawyer, but if there was a government investigation into something and somebody was caught tampering with witnesses, that would be a crime. So I don't think this particular thing is a crime because the NBA is not a government agency by any means, but it is at the very least incredibly unethical and wrong. And so the way that I think that this incriminates them further together beyond just the unethicalness of doing it in the first place is that it clearly calls into question if these unnamed people, who we don't know obviously who they are, and by extension of not knowing who they are, we don't know which of the anecdotes in Baxter Holmes's larger story that came out last week these unnamed sources were the source for, right? We don't know if it was the HR stuff. We don't know if it was the basketball operation. We don't know who these people are, right? But her telling these people to be quiet when basically, aside from a handful of small things in that story, Robert Sarver has categorically denied everything that is being alleged against him. How can somebody be threatened by or feel as if their family is being put into jeopardy by something that's not true? And furthermore, if you kind of follow the logic with me, how can Penny Sarver know that these folks may have spoken? I don't know the behind the scenes. Maybe they've had conversations previously. Maybe they know each other personally, and this people told Penny to her face, I spoke to this reporter for the story because I think what's happening is wrong. But if we assume that they were relatively anonymous and that Baxter Holmes did the right thing by keeping these people private and everything else, then the obvious question to ask is, how do you know who the people are who may have been a witness to something that did not happen, right? Robert is saying these things did not happen, but Penny is saying, I know you were somebody who spoke up about this, and I want you to stop. Well, spoke up about what? I thought that these things were not true, right? And so I think what that leads me to ultimately is the idea that it continues to be harmful to have Robert and his wife, apparently now we have to throw her into this, continue to be in charge of and around any members of this organization while the investigation plays out. How tenuous it is to continue to have that, and something that Katie and I talked about for Monday's show of how flawed this entire system can be in the first place, that we don't have more rigorous structures in place and that we could allow somebody like Penny Sarver to be actively talking to people who are likely to be questioned and interviewed and speak to what was going on with the NBA investigators, right? And lastly, I think aside from the fact that the workplace could continue to be as hostile as the story alleges it to be, as long as these two people remain at the top of it, even as the investigation plays out, that could bring them away from the team. You also have the idea, which is something that I tried to start out with at the very beginning when I responded to this story on Thursday, which is that as long as Robert Sarver is the owner, and as long especially as this investigation continues to play out, there is not going to be rest or a moment of peace. And I just keep coming back to, again, without putting the pressure onto the players or onto Monty Williams for hearing what they're going to say to be the saviors of this moment or anything like that, but also understanding that when you hear somebody like Zach Lowe or even Baxter Holmes himself say that in the aftermath of this piece coming out, what everybody around the NBA for the most part seems to agree with is that this thing can get very much fast-forwarded if the players decide to speak up. What they have told us so far is that they're going to let the investigation play out and they are going to wait to see what is determined by the league before they say anything. Well, as more and more mounts, and we have now seen evidence between multiple statements by Robert Sarver and now this from his wife, that this story is not going to just quietly linger in the background, and it is going to be a constant presence in those players' lives, in every Suns fan's life. How can it continue to wait? The noise will get louder. The calls for these guys to say something and sort of take a side, even if that is an unenviable position to be put into, and Robert is the one who put them into it, that's what's going to continue to happen. They will not be able to get away from this, and the league may need to be a little bit more aggressive. Maybe release initial findings from the investigation prior to a final report. I don't know if that is a good idea necessarily in every aspect, but I think you need to be able to put into what's the truth, and if there continues to be signs that this thing is really bad and is still really bad, you need to be able to pull the plug on it sooner rather than later. If that means suspending Robert Sarver for a moment while this investigation plays out, suspending his wife from participating with activities around the team directly, a restraining order for folks involved, this cannot just be something that quietly lingers. It's already been proven it will not be that. And they're bringing this onto themselves. This is not something that the NBA should be blamed for because their investigation is taking too long or any of that. It's the fact that these two people now, again, we're doing two, we have to consider both of them now, are actively harming the process and continuing to do things that are very similar to what is being alleged in the piece in the first place. So as much as I hope that this does not continue to be a storm cloud, it will be. I mean, I think that's just the truth. All right, let's talk some basketball because we did see some new things. The Suns are on a 5-game winning streak despite all of this, which of course is the bizarre reality of sometimes these types of moments and sports in general, it seems like more and more lately. So we'll get into notebook dump on the Suns-Hawks game and the Suns-Kings games. First, though, quick word from Built Bar, which is my favorite protein bar and especially perfect for the holiday season. We all love Thanksgiving, but there's maybe, and not maybe, there is way too many calories, way too much sugar. You go from Thanksgiving right into the holiday season, the Christmas season, and you are bombarded with try this, try that, come to this, come to that, and you're eating. A lot of us gain weight, whatever. It's can be kind of lousy, but Built Bar is there to fill in those gaps for you. Maybe replace that coconut cream pie with a coconut Built Bar or a raspberry Built Bar instead of that raspberry pie. They're all low calorie, they're all low carb, and they are all high in protein. Built Bar is delicious. They're covered 100% chocolate. You got a choice, a flavor, a taste for everybody, and it's a great option for when you're hungry. So if Thanksgiving isn't coming soon enough, go for a Built Bar or two. Check them out at built.com. When you make your purchase, use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. Again, that's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. Moving on from Mrs. Sarver for the moment and turning our attention to the Suns' win streak here. Started the season 1-3, have won 5 straight. And I mean, coming off the Kings game on Monday night, this was honestly the type of routine win you want to see in the regular season for what we are now remembering is a pretty great team. Now, the Suns only scored 11 points in the fourth quarter, and the Kings were able to make a little bit of a comeback, but you see what this team is capable of. It was a reminder. 30 attempted threes, 28 assists, and their offense, I think, to me, really came alive in this Hawks game. And that continued with those great numbers in the Kings game, and that's where I want to start. You are seeing the chemistry and the force, the offensive force that this team can play with, and they're finding that again. I think Frank Kaminsky being back into the lineup has really helped that, as crazy as it might sound. And I think, obviously, Devin Booker getting the cobwebs off was incredibly helpful, too. So that, to me, I tweeted that the second quarter of this game was the Hawks game, was probably the best quarter in terms of cohesion and offensive execution of the entire season. That might be hyperbole a little bit. I don't remember every single quarter, so I'm sure you guys can scroll through the box scores and find me a better one. But I would tell you 32 points in that second quarter. They were generating open three after open three. The defense was a little spotty. Obviously, they didn't have DeAndre Ayton. He has missed he missed both of these games, but they felt overwhelming, I guess, is probably the word to really put a fine point on this. They felt overwhelming. It felt like we were watching the playoff Suns again, where they are just creating turnovers, creating havoc, controlling the boards against Clint Capella, which was no easy task. The Suns out-rebounded the Hawks in this. Oh, no. They were basically neck and neck in this game. if not for the Hawks' occasional offensive rebounds, but the Suns were able to turn Hawks' misses and Hawks' turnovers into points. They were generating three after three after three, and Devin Booker could not miss. That is the recipe we saw really, really work. And then they extended it. I mean, a 109-104 win against the Kings is something that should just happen in a random November NBA game, right? I just said, if this team is great, these are the types of games you win. Only one guy scored over 20. It was Cameron Payne. We had, obviously, those 28 assists. I'm looking if anyone, only Jay Crowder among the top rotation players shot worse than 50% from the field. Landry Shamet was just a touch worse, but everybody else was right there. Shamet is getting going as a result. It was always going to be just a matter of time. He's a player who's going to be a byproduct of the Suns running and executing great offense. He's not going to be somebody who creates, but he can be somebody who, when you're looking for him, when there's space, when the ball's popping around, he's going to get unlocked. We're still waiting for Cam Johnson to do that, but you're seeing it with Cameron Payne, and you're seeing it benefit everybody and obviously translate into wins. So that, to me, was one of the biggest things. I want to talk a little bit more about Cameron Payne. I want to talk a little bit more about Mikal Bridges. So let's do that in just one quick second. First, though, a word from betonline.ag. BetOnline is the fastest and the easiest way to bet on all of your favorite sports all season long, whether that's basketball or football. They also have a new web interface. So to get the basketball season started off right, I'm recording right after the big college basketball tip-off. Go to BetOnline, experience that new interface, make an account, and then make your first deposit. And when you do, use the promo code LOCKEDON to get a 50% welcome bonus. That's promo code LOCKEDON. When you make your first deposit, to get a 50% welcome bonus straight to your account. From basketball, football, baseball postseason, the NHL, boxing, and UFC, to your favorite Vegas casino games. Yeah, you can play some games on here as well. You don't have to put down money on the lines. You can also get into some gaming. BetOnline remains the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. Let's close out the show a little bit more specific. This is, again, coming off of the Suns proving their offensive value, winning five straight games. The defense remains a work in progress. DeAndre Ayton is missing games. He came back with the right leg contusion. Now he is missing games again. Very bizarre on that note, but they are stringing together wins. They're looking like themselves. And the guy who I knew would be a big driver of that when he returned to the floor was Cameron Payne. And I want to talk about him a little bit more because I haven't had the chance to. I was, you know, you were in kind of feel out mode to start the season. We have a little bit more of a sample now, but then he went out with injury. He played in this Hawks game and was pretty aggressive for coming back, you know, his first game back, but the Suns were minus 22 when he was on the floor. He was 1 of 5 from the field. Not a great game. Really came alive in the Kings game, was the game high 24 points for the Suns. And 9 of 14 from the field, 4 of 6 from 3. He was getting off the ball to make some threes. He was pushing the pace a little bit. He did have 4 turnovers, but that's to be expected with him to a certain degree. He pushes the pace, and he is an engine for this team. And it's worth thinking about him a little bit more because I think that it's fair to say, I don't think this is out of line or out of turn or anything, Chris Paul is looking even more like he is sort of taking things smoothly and easily this regular season. So if you can have a healthy Cameron Payne and you can have a productive Cameron Payne like we all saw on Monday night against Sacramento, you can insulate Chris Paul a little bit more. You can also get a little bit more creative. We have still really not seen the Paul Booker Payne lineup a lot because of the injury to Payne, so there's not much of a sample there in terms of the stats and the on-off stuff and the lineup data for that. But that's something we all want to see. We all want to see Cameron Payne. I mean, look, he played 22 minutes in this game and Paul played 26. Now, I know it was a blowout through three quarters and that has a large part to do with why he played so much. But you could see games where maybe does Cam Payne close a game here and there? I don't think it would be crazy. I don't think you necessarily want to ask Chris Paul to sit down. We know how that went for Sam Presti and others. But Payne is a really big factor for winning and he makes this team different. He makes it less predictable, he makes it more forceful, that buzzword that Monty likes to use, and you just notice it right away. I mean, this Kings game, do they lose it without him? I mean, I think that it's completely fair question to ask. And all of that said, this was something I was thinking about prior to ever wanting to do this episode or even seeing the 24-point game, is that Payne, defensively, one of the puzzling things about him is that he, I mean, to me, from the jump, the surprising things that he's been able to do is not that he can make threes, although his form is wonky, or that he can score for himself. I think those were givens. What has surprised me is that he can defend at a pretty high level, and he can play make, which I think Chris Paul has helped with more than anybody maybe in the league even could help, right? But most importantly, Payne has shown himself to be a pretty good defender. On the ball, even off the ball, I think his rotations are solid. I think he can help from the weak side really well and at least play the passing lanes. That's why you see him juicing the tempo so much, is because he can go out and start running off of the turnovers that he creates. What is not happening, though, is that the Suns are not using Payne on the best matchup on the opposing player, which, I mean, I was just talking about that Paul Payne-Booker lineup. Well, that doesn't seem very good. If you don't trust Payne to defend the highest level offensive player on the opposing team, he wasn't defending Fox when he was out there playing against De'Aaron Fox. He, no matter who the matchup is, no matter what game we're talking about, he's not going to be defending Trae Young, for instance, right, in the Hawks game. And that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And I would love to hear your guys' thoughts too on this, because Payne to me looks like, at the very least, he's probably a better option than Paul and Booker on smaller, you know, slithery athletic point guards, which the Suns faced two of this weekend in Trae Young and in De'Aaron Fox. Now, neither one of those guys really killed him. I mean, Trae Young had a pretty great game, but a lot of that was getting to the free throw line and, you know, making his threes the way that he does, which are very difficult to defend. Fox had a pretty good game. So it's not to say that the strategy was flawed, that they needed another option because these guys were just so hot. So maybe that has something to do with it, right? Maybe Payne would be an option if things needed to be adjusted. But for the most part, the Suns are going to be fine putting Cameron Payne or putting Mikal Bridges out on a Trae Young type and having Cameron Payne defend maybe the second or third most scary offensive option for the opponent. I guess my point is they should do it more. They should do it more because Chris Paul is not going to do it. Devin Booker can do it against certain players, Chris Middleton in the finals, obviously, being an example, maybe even Paul George at times in the conference finals, but he's not going to defend those small point guards. And we know Mikal really struggles doing that because he's almost too long to do it. He gets caught up on screens, is kind of has the hands in the cookie jar thing. He can get called for fouls a lot of the time there, and he's not quite the, you know, quick twitch athlete that, you know, maybe a Kawhi Leonard is, right? So to me, it makes perfect sense that Payne would be an option there because it's not Javon Carter anymore. Obviously, you know, Landry Shamet's not really that type of player. Elfrid Payton can be, but you don't really want to have him out on the floor unless you need to have him out on the floor. So continue to be confused by Cameron Payne. The offense can be so good. The defense, I don't think it holds the Suns back, but the way that they use him is puzzling. The last thing I want to say is Mikal Bridges, I talk about him so much that sometimes I almost want to hold myself back a little bit. Mikal Bridges has been the second best player on this team this season, in my opinion. Maybe that's a crazy thing to say, but I think Mikal has been right there behind Devin Booker. You've not seen Chris Paul have the scoring impact. I know that's not all that matters, but at the end of the day, I mean, 16 points and 5 assists in 26 minutes against the Kings. I know that's going to be deflated because he sat a lot of that second half out of the game, was not competitive anymore. So, of course, you don't need him to play, and who cares what the statistics were. But, you know, he has not been a guy who's going to go drop 30 this season, and he hasn't needed to be. But Mikal Bridges has been consistent. He's been incredible. He continues to grow as a player. He is everywhere. I've talked about how he is a one-man transition defense, and I just was talking about his defense being, you know, somewhat challenged against a Trae Young type of player, but Bridges is improving there. He's at least going to keep those guys in check. I mean, Trae Young had 6 turnovers, so despite having 31 and 13. He turned the ball over. He shot less than 50% from the field. He was making a lot of tough threes. You know Mikhail can at least make life hard on those people, and he is looking exactly like the Villanova version of himself right now. I mean, really, truly, he has already become comfortable with that mid-range shot. He is probably the best transition scorer, wing scorer in the NBA as a finisher. I mean, LeBron is the best transition scorer in the NBA on the wing, if we are obviously grading top to bottom. But Mikhail finishing plays, finishing lobs, speeding past the defense, making his threes for the most part, and just doing everything. He looks exactly like the Villanova Bridges, and he, for my money, has been the second best player overall this season behind Devin Booker. It's an embarrassment of riches when the Suns roster is healthy. We will probably see DeAndre Ayton fit that soon. I didn't go super granular. I mean, Landry Shamet with, I mean, guys, give me the feedback. I can go as granular or as macro as you want. I mean, we have Landry Shamet, I said, running around screens. He spaces so deep, and that's one of the cool things about him. Devin Booker is obviously somebody known for that as well, where he'll stand several feet behind the three-point line. What Shamet can do is he'll do that, but he's also moving around all the time, which really, really helps. And he's slowly starting to look like he's going to be making some of those. You also have, pardon me, Abdul Nader, who I can keep talking about. He doesn't have that handle. He's been really tentative, taking threes. They're figuring out how to use JaVale McGee. So I got more in the notebook. Maybe it wasn't a full dump, but that is what we wanted to get out of here with today. Hope you enjoyed the show. Hope you are right back here tomorrow morning after the Trailblazers game. I am back in the Footprint Center. Missed Saturday's game live. I will be there for Portland Phoenix on Wednesday, and I will be right here with you right afterwards. Thank you again for making Locked On Suns your first listen every morning, this morning, every morning from now on, all of them, and we appreciate it. We're free all the time, every podcast platform, YouTube if you prefer watching, and we're right here with you. So I will talk to you tomorrow.